Wednesday morning, everybody. Hope you are having a fantastic start to your day. Hope you had a great Tuesday night, a better Tuesday night than the Dodgers had, and certainly, DeMarco, a better Tuesday afternoon than college football had yesterday. It's one of those things, you know it's coming. You don't want it to come, but when it actually hits you between the eyes, a very, very sobering day yesterday when both the Big Ten and the Pac-10 decided to pull the plug on their college football season. Just kind of a slap right across the face.
You know, exactly as we predicted, or right down the middle. You know, the ACC, SEC still open, Pac-10 and Big Ten decided to shut it down. So we were kind of both right there. But funny, man, I wish they would have waited. And this is not a shameless plug, but maybe they should have waited to see Hard Knocks, to see what the pros are doing to keep their players safe. I mean, it is possible to play football through this, at least in one episode. But yeah, I guess if you're going to err on the side of safety, you can't argue with that. But it's just a shame for some of these, you know, fall athletes, some of these seniors, some of these kids that just won't get a shot to play right now.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you said that, because there's a whole different there's a million different angles to this entire thing. But the one thing that you just don't hear said very often is what you just mentioned right there. And that is, and I know we thought, well, okay, what is this going to do for the kids going into the draft? What does this mean for Justin Fields? What does this mean for Trevor Lawrence? What does this mean for Penei Sewell up at Oregon? Is he going to come? All these guys, they're going to be high draft picks and NFL players. And that's important too, for sure. But even in a place like Ohio State, or Oregon, or USC, or these places, you know, Wisconsin, the vast majority of the guys on the team, they're not going to play professional football.
Right.
They're not. They're going to go play college football, enjoy every minute of it, and then that's it. That's the end of the line. And this has gone away for those guys. And maybe it comes back in the spring. Who knows? I know that they're going to try to do it. I'm skeptical of that. We can get into that in a minute. But you're right. The last season for a lot of these guys could just have gone up in smoke yesterday. No one's really even mentioning that.
Well, I mean, look, if you don't believe it's if you don't believe it's real, or it's a hoax, or it's overblown, I mean, I guess if you're a sports fan, this is a first sign indicator that, look, I mean, some of this stuff you're going to lose, period. You just don't get back. It's not fair. You can blame it on COVID if you want, but, and it is fair to blame it on COVID. That's just how it is. So some things have to go away. And, you know, when it comes to my kids, my children, I have the Oprah Winfrey mentality. I heard this on her show once, where she had a dinner party at her house and some lady had the audacity to take some chewy gum out of her mouth right before they started eating, and she put it on the side of the plate. Oprah threw away the whole set. You know what I mean? So when it comes to safety, you know, look, if there's any hint of danger, I get it. I want to keep my kids as far away from danger as possible. So, you know, I can't argue with anybody that has safety in mind when it comes to these amateur athletes, these kids.
Yeah, well, that's exactly where Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, and what he said, that this was a safety issue, that he's always going to be the guy that makes a decision based on the safety of his athletes. Let's take a listen to Kevin Warren right here, commissioner of the Big Ten, on why he made the decision to pull the plug for his conference.
As things began to evolve, you look at the number of cases that are spiking, the number of deaths, not only in our country, in our states where many of our schools are located, but worldwide, is that I promise that all the decisions that we will make during my tenure here at the Big Ten will always put the mental and physical health and safety and wellness of our student athletes at the center. And when you look at this decision, we just believe collectively there's too much uncertainty at this point in time in our country, and to encourage our student athletes to participate in fall sports. And I take this responsibility seriously, and I will continually do everything in my power to make sure that we put our student athletes in a position to be empowered and to be elevated. But it's people first.
So that's Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, talking about his decision to cancel fall sports in his conference. And I, when you hear him talk, you can hear the weight in his voice. You can hear the fact that this is not a decision that was made lightly, DeMarco, because, look, it is complicated. It is nuanced. That how do you have kids on campus going to class in some places, but it's then that's okay, but it's not okay to play football. That I've seen a bunch of comments from other people saying, well, you know, if you're going to collect money from all these students to go online and you're going to have classes in person and all these things, why can't we have a college football? I get that there's no perfect answer for all this. And I keep coming back to what I've been saying, really, since the idea of playing a college football season or not has been bandied about. And that is, it's a liability issue. Yes, it's a health and safety issue. I'm not dismissing that. That's obviously a big part of that. But they're doing the math on the worst case scenarios. They're doing the math on what happens if we have a terrible outbreak. What happens if one of these players gets very, very, very sick or worse? What happens if that happens more than once? These are the decisions that are being made. It's not, could we get to the end of the line? Because, yeah, you probably could. Who knows what it would look like? But that's not the decision. Can we do it? It's, should we do it? And if we do it and all hell breaks loose, then what? That's the decision they're making.
Yeah, no doubt, man. And I remember there was an outbreak of MRSA around the NFL. Isaac Bruce kind of hit me up to that. I forgot all about it. And, you know, that was a scary situation. And that lasted a long time with, you know, guys losing their careers to it and then lawsuits and all this other stuff. So you have to think macro. And I know Kevin Warren. Kevin Warren was our player programs director in St. Louis when we won the Super Bowl. He is a great guy, and he will stand in the face of anything when it comes to protecting the rights of the players. And he will stand up to anyone, so I get it. And, you know, just watching, you know, the Rams and what they said last night was they're lucky to be in California because they can use the outdoor space. Well, think about the Big Ten and where those schools are. And some schools don't have the benefit of the weather. Eventually, you're all going to have to be inside, and you know, COVID isn't going away in a month. It may not go away in a year. So this is not something that you can just say, okay, let's just try to get through it now. What happens in October and December and January when it gets cold and you have to bring people inside, and it's going to be harder to social distance when there's snow on the ground? So yeah, I mean, this is a macro thought, and like he said, he's just thinking of the safety, period, end of story, and, you know, we'll come back around in 2021 and see if we can do this again. But I understand where he's coming from. It's sad, but that's just where we are right now.
It's sad, and in the most literal sense of the word, too. It was a really historic day yesterday that, for the first time in really a century or more, we're not going to have college football, or at least we're not going to have portions of college football. I know that the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 are still planning on moving forward. I'm skeptical that they'll actually get it done. Time will tell, but let's take a listen to Paul Feinbaum, DeMarco, and he's saying that this is one of the most consequential days in the history of college football.
This has been the most consequential day in the history of college football. Never have any of us seen anything quite like this. You know, where it goes from here, I think, is really the big question. You just read the statements from the ACC and the SEC. But ultimately, I think it's going to be the Big 12, which is always the quirky conference, that will ultimately determine which way this goes. If the Big 12 decides to fold, to cancel the season, I think it will make it suffocatingly difficult for the ACC and the SEC. As far as reaction, I think you know what the reaction is. Kevin, you've been on our program, and the callers want to see college football. They understand the issues. They understand the protocols, but they desperately want to see games. And that's why so many people around this country, as you have said repeatedly for the last couple of hours, are so devastated and heartbroken by these announcements today.
You know, DeMarco, I love college football. You love college football. My greatest family traditions that we have in the Rodgers lineage is that we go to the Rose Bowl every single year. We bring our entire extended family. We've had as many as 50 people. We've had as few as, you know, 10 or 12 here and there. It is our favorite day of the year. We go out there. We love college football. I want it to be played, but I get it. Like, I just don't get this idea of how this is going to uproot these people's lives. I understand it's important to you. I really, truly do. I love it too. But at some point, there is a bigger decision to be made. And whether that's in the Big 12 or the SEC or the ACC, I get it that you can sit at home and watch it safely. But you're asking a lot of guys that aren't getting a lot to go do this. I don't understand how that part of the equation is just skipped over so easily.
Can we say the grown-ups dropped the ball here? And it's been, I mean, for years now. I mean, the system of college football, we kind of know what it is. Everybody kind of tiptoes around it. But we know what college football is all about. And it's not about the kids, it's about the money. So I think this kind of underscores some of those issues that it's so spread out. And you said it yesterday, there's no one central figure that kind of runs the sport. So it's just, we can't, it's not safe. If we do this, we're going to risk a lot more than you guys think. And, you know, lives are at stake. We're just not prepared to do it. So maybe what Paul Feinbaum was alluding to is this will change the sport. This will change a lot in terms of the system and how it's governed, because no one expected this, but you should have been ready for something like this or some sort of protocols, or you should have had a better reaction to this by now. So I get where he's coming from, but the thing he said about the Big 12 to me always seemed like, you know, they drove the getaway car for the SEC. They're going to follow what the ACC and the SEC, you know what I mean? So I would bet that the Big 12 is going to play. Yeah. I would bet they're going to play no matter what. They want to be a part of that group. So they're going to say the Big 10 and the Pac-12 are, that's those guys out west, are those northern-minded, high-minded people up north over there in Michigan and Ohio State. So they're not going to play. We'll play with the South.
Yeah, no, there's a whole lot there. In fact, I think we should talk about the leadership issue next, because I think that's really important. Lack of leadership is probably a little more accurate. And you're right. This is falling almost on lines of stereotypes, right? The West Coast, yeah, you guys don't care about college football. Well, I mean, not compared to you guys down in the South, we don't. You're right about that.
We don't poison trees.
Right. We don't poison trees and disassociate with family members because they decided to go war eagle instead of roll tide. You know, yeah, you're right. We don't roll quite like that. But it's not the Michigans and Ohio States, like you said, the high-minded northerners. It's the South. It's the Texas area and the Big 12. And this is more important to them. Now, maybe they'll get through it safely. And maybe they'll be like, you guys are all a bunch of wimps for not doing it. We told you it would be fine. The opposite might be true, too, where something terrible does happen. And the weirdos out on the West Coast and the high-minded people up north are saying, hey, we tried to tell you guys this was a real problem. You know, we won't know until it goes. We'll find out.
Right.
And that's where the leadership issue comes in. And that's what I think we should get into next. What does college football need? Who do they need to lead it? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. So the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have decided to not play college football in the fall. We will see whether or not they can throw together some sort of spring schedule. We're still waiting to see what the other Power Five conferences do. The Big 12 says that they are moving forward with their plan to play 9 conference games and 1 non-conference game each. The SEC and the ACC are still planning on playing their college football. I was thinking about this, DeMarco. You know what this reminds me a lot of?
What's that?
It's and you have kids, I have kids, and I think a lot of our listeners have kids as well. This is the equivalent of the parents that will buy booze for their high school kids and throw a big party. let me explain, right? Okay.
Oh, that's great.
there is a big party going on in the neighborhood. And mom and dad of little Johnny over there are saying, you know what? We'll get a keg for everybody. We'll make sure that everybody's safe. We're not going to let everybody drive. We're going to make sure that everybody is well taken care of. What's the harm in letting the kids have a little fun? We did it when we were in high school. Wow. What's the big deal? Okay. That's the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 saying, we'll keep an eye on everything. You can trust us. You can trust what could go wrong. Okay. That's right. What they're doing. The Pac-12 and the Big 10 are that tight ass mom and dad who are saying, you're not going to that party. You're not going. And the kids sit there and go, but I want to go. Everybody else is going. Everybody else gets to go to this party. Well, they said we're not going to drive. What's going to go wrong? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? And they're saying, I'll tell you what could happen. Somebody could get hurt. Somebody could get worse than hurt. Somebody could get in trouble. Something that you can't foresee could happen, because I have the experience of knowing that this stuff, that what your best intentions are not enough to prevent something terrible from happening. So we're not going to go. Okay, and now you have these two different things. And so one of two things is going to happen. Mom and dad are going to either be the guys that are too uptight, too tight, and saying, no, you can't do it. And everybody goes to that party and has a great time. And they say, see, you should have come. We had a blast. Or mom and dad are looking at it saying, you know what? You heard what happened to Stacy, right? You saw what happened to her. Now are you glad? Yeah. Now are you glad you didn't go to that party? That's what this is.
You'll never get the thank you from the kids. Yeah.
You'll never get the thank you because they would have said, oh, I wouldn't have done that. You know, Stacy's an idiot. I would have never done that in the first place. I get that. But these are the decisions that you're making. And because you don't have anybody that's making a central decision, everybody's kind of left up to themselves. And we're not going to know who's right until it's all over. And right is whoever is right lost. If you just skipped out and didn't do it because you didn't want to play football and it goes off seamlessly, like he told you, you could have done it. And you're like, yeah, I guess maybe you could have. Or something terrible happens and the other side's like, guys, we tried to tell you. This is a disaster across the board.
I totally 100% get that because I had to do that with my daughter here. You can't go to this party. You can't go to this party. Are the parents there? All that sort of stuff. And I hated it because it made me feel old. But you have to, and you're worried. And sometimes you were exactly right in your instincts. You can't go, oh, I hate you for not letting me go. And then the next day somebody got had a DUI or had a car wreck. I told you, see? And I remember being in high school and being at some of those parties and – you know, going to the host of the party and saying, you know, what time do your parents get home? What do you mean? They're upstairs right now. Yeah. You know, and I got a beer in my hand, you know?
Right.
You know, I'm like, oh my God, wow. So yeah, I get it. But, you know, what I don't know, what's the mechanism? What do you do if you're a college senior, a Pac-12 fifth year senior that, you know, your pro prospects aren't very high to begin with and you just don't get football, you don't get it back? I mean, what happens? Do they do the senior walk, you know, via Zoom? I mean, all that stuff that comes with being a senior, your last hit, your last practice, your last game, your last X, Y, and Z. I mean, I hope they can do that. I mean, throughout my neighborhood, they did this for every graduate. They put the little – I'm sure they did it in your neighborhood.
They did.
The little things out in front, congratulations. I hope they do that in some way for some of these guys that will never play football again. I really do.
Yeah, it's funny. And look, I was a college athlete and a very, very average one at best. On my best day, I was in the middle of the pack and I didn't have very many best days. But it means something. It absolutely means something, especially when it starts to come to the end. You start to appreciate a little more. You start to appreciate just and this sounds corny as hell, but just putting on the uniform, sitting in the dugout, you know, chopping it up with your buddies and telling stupid stories on the bus and hanging out and playing cards and all that stuff. And in your last year, you kind of do enjoy it a little more. You kind of do take the time to reflect on, man, because look, there, I was under no misconceptions. I wasn't going to go pitch in the major leagues. This was the end of the line for me. This was it.
Yeah.
And I loved every minute of it. And I had a very typical experience in that my senior year ended, we had a party, everybody said thank you, and you move on. And it's satisfying because you got to run it out. You got to finish the whole thing. You're right. If you're going to be a first round draft pick and you don't get to play your senior year at Ohio State or your junior year at Ohio State because the season, that sucks, but you're going to go play for the Chiefs or the Seahawks or the Rams or the Chargers or whoever. You're going to go play football. You're going to get to continue to go play. So the story's not over. But for those other guys, it just is a real threat. And this is the part that I struggle with because there is no good answer. Sometimes blank just sucks.
It just
sucks.
Yeah.
This sucks. And there is no good answer for it other than, hey, look, you're going to maybe miss your last year of college football. But the reason we're taking it away is because we don't want you to die.
Right.
That's a pretty good reason to not do something.
I went rafting at, what lake was it? Or somewhere up in Northern California with a bunch of friends. I used to work at this pizza place. And at the end of summer, we'd go out for this big raft. And one guy fell in and, you know, it just so happened there was a scuba or the park ranger was coming by. So they jumped in and saved him. And when they got him to the raft and like kind of threw him in, he had a bloody nose. And we're like, well, what the hell happened to his nose? Well, I had to punch him. I'm like, what, you had to punch him? Yeah, because he was, you know, trying to drag me down. And it's like, look, fool, I'm trying to save your life. You know, I understand.
Right.
I understand you're mad. I get it. If you're a football player, I'm mad at this and you're canceling my season. But look, I'm trying to save your life as well. This is, you know, COVID is dangerous. If you get this, people could die. Not just you, but people, you know, close to you, your loved ones. So I'm trying to save your life. But it does absolutely, you know, freaking suck. That you don't get a chance to go out the way you want to go out. So, you know, maybe it's not for the schools. Maybe it's for the families to appreciate your career. I remember at the end of my college career at UW, we were in the our last practice, and I had a hard-ass defensive line coach. Oh my, he was the best coach I ever had. He taught me more about playing defensive line than anybody since or before. But we had this rack, and we had to like lower ourselves into it and squat down and do all these, you know, these tough little workouts just to warm us up. And we hated this dang thing, but it was the best thing for us. So the last time me and my senior buddies went through it, we flipped it over and flipped it off. You know, like, this is it. We made it. It was just like just one of those things that, you know, we got through. We completed it. And for some people that don't get that sense of completion, I feel for you. But just remember why they're doing it at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said something important, too, DeMarco, that it's not just, oh, hey, we're trying to protect you, which they are, that we're trying to make sure that you don't bring this home to your grandmother and kill her.
Right.
We're trying to make sure that you don't bring this home to your sister who's a diabetic and she doesn't die. You know, it's not just, well, I'll be fine. I'm 20 years old. I'm in the best shape of my life. I can bench press a house. Nothing's going to get me. Okay, probably not. But that right. doesn't mean the old lady living next to you. That doesn't mean that your grandmother, your grandfather, your aunt, your sister, your uncle doesn't have an opportunity
somebody
to get very,
risk.
Very sick.
And
yeah.
I guess you can rage at the machine a little bit for not being more prepared for this, but who saw this coming? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wish that my school, my conference, the conference or the school that I chose could have been a little farther or more advanced. So we can handle something like this. But I mean, I guess we're all still taking baby steps when it comes to this thing right now.
Well, we are for sure. And it's across the board, whether it's on a local level, a state level, a national level, and certainly on a conference level. And something. There's no leadership. There's no person in college football that's saying, everybody shut up. Here's what we're going to do. You over here, you're going to make sure that your facility is running like this. You over here, we're going to make sure that you have this. And this is what we're going to do across the board for these guys. And if we can't do it, we're shutting it down. That way there isn't the SEC looking at the Big Ten saying, you guys are a bunch of pansies. What do you mean you're shutting down? That way it's easier for everybody to swallow, because if I'm a Michigan player, I'm looking at a player at Georgia saying, well, they're playing. Why can't I play? You know what I mean? It's a deal where if everybody plays or everybody doesn't play, I think it's just a little bit more powerful.
The no national champion this year. Conference champion, sure. If you're playing, ACC, SEC, Big 12 champion, but no national championship. Because you got two conferences sitting out, and more are sitting out. So you can't have a real national championship. I think that would be fair.
Now you're jumping ahead to take it or shake it, because that is a very good question. No. You see, we're on the same wavelength. I like it, DeMarco. All right. We'll put college football aside. There's more bad news. How about that on a Wednesday morning? That's not that bad. The Dodgers cannot get their bats going. They drop another one to San Diego. What's the solution there? That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. 6-2 last night, DeMarco. The Dodgers lose the first two games of a four-game series against the San Diego Padres last night. Manny Machado hits a grand slam, kind of busts that one open in the third inning. And the Dodgers can't hit. And they're going to. I am firmly of the belief, DeMarco, that this stuff is going to turn. Here, because Jock Peterson is not a 196 guy. Will Smith is not a 194 guy. Cody Bellinger, my goodness, is not a 167 guy. Max Muncy, 186. That's 1, 2, 3, 4 of their regular guys, 4 of their really good players that are batting under 200. Under any other circumstance, you say, it's fine. They'll figure it out. Fact of the matter is they've played 18 games. That's about a third of the season, as crazy as that is. And they're not hitting. And you got to wonder what you do if you're Dave Roberts to get this thing going, because you can't just sit around and say, oh, it'll turn, because you might not have enough time for it to turn. By the time it turns, there might be 12 games left in the season.
Well, I've officially backed out the panic bus. It's in the street. It's not started. As a matter of fact, it may start it up now. But no, I mean, small ball, change your approach some. Just try to get anything going that you can, manufacture runs just to get people going. But, I mean, we said this yesterday and we'll keep saying it. It's baseball. It's the law of averages. And I'm a big believer in the do theory. Eventually, these guys will start hitting. It just, what hole are you going to put yourself in until that starts? But, you know, the guy I feel, you know, the worst for is Ross Stripling. You know, Machado is getting hot, and how many screw-ups did you have before that home run, before that grand slam?
Yeah, they were throwing the ball all over the infield.
You're booting it all around. So
yeah.
They knew, he knew, and crack, there it goes. Center right, home run, and you lose. But, yeah, I'm with you. Eventually, you've got to find a way to get out of this mess. But if we had a remedy, we'd be in the majors right now. You know what
right.
I mean? If there
right.
was an easy fix to this thing, then you'd have several World Series championships to your name. But all you can do in baseball is just keep going. Keep those ABs going, and eventually they'll start hitting.
Yeah, it's weird because it demonstrates – let me back up a little bit. The Dodgers are really good, and they're going to make the playoffs. They just have too many good players. They have too many good pitchers. They have too much depth. They have too much flexibility. And we're sitting here, at least I'm sitting here, at 11-7, scratching my head saying, hey, what the hell's going wrong? They're 11-7. They're a game and a half out of first place. They're fine. Okay, so that's one category. But the other category is that you look at this, and they've played a third of the season. Okay, it's a really small sample size, except for it isn't right now. And the margins of success are so razor thin. Like you said with Ross Stripling. Ross Stripling a couple of nights ago when he pitched against San Diego the first time did really well until he walked a couple of guys, and then all of a sudden it's a two-run game. Last night, he did not pitch well. He did not have one of his better games, but it wasn't a catastrophe. It just was right. kind of mediocre, and the Dodgers weren't in the game because they can't hit. They've been winning those 11 games because they pitch like crazy. And last night, they got an average pitching performance instead of a very good one. And not only did they lose, they really weren't in it at all. The game, and as you watch that game last night, it never felt like the Dodgers were getting close. It never felt like they were getting ready to pop something, getting ready to have that big inning, because every time you'd get a guy on base, Cody Bellinger would come up and ground into a double play. Every time you'd get a guy on base, here comes Mac Muncy, who's popping something up. These are their most important guys, and they just can't get it going. So, I like to your point, I don't know what Dave Roberts says. I don't know what he does. I don't know if you sit a guy down. I know yesterday he put Bellinger at first base for the first time all season long in a starting situation, but whatever tricks he has in his bag, now's the time to start breaking them out because they have to start hitting.
I don't know what you can do with the lineup. I mean, how much can you shift? Where can you move guys around to get guys going to fire people up? But the one thing I do know is, you know, you can't beat yourself. And just playing a hard nine is sometimes good enough. I mean, you can't yell at guys for struggling at the plate. Or maybe you can. Some guys do. But that will come around. But all the other stuff, you know, booting it around, I mean – that stuff you can take care of. Playing a hard nine is something that you can do day in and day out. Expecting to win every time you take the field is something you can do. So if I'm Dave Roberts, maybe I'll just start with the basics there. Go major or go Bull Durham on them. Throw some bats in the shower. You know? Whoever's not in the shower is going to get fined $100. And that's got to start counting. I mean, that stuff you can control, and maybe that's where they need to start. So it's always good to, you know, go back to the beginning, even at the quarter pole or the third of the season or wherever we are in the season. It's good to go back to the beginning every now and then just to restart your brain. And eventually those bats will start to come around.
Yeah, I'm not worried that Cody Bellinger is going to hit 167 for the rest of his life. I'm not worried about it. He's too good. That's going to change. What is possible is Cody Bellinger could hit 167 for another month. That's not crazy. And if he hits 167 for another month, the season's over and he's not helping.
I would almost bet anything I have that won't happen. That can't happen. For a month, no way.
It's already happened. It's happening right now. He's hit 167 for a month. So I agree with you. I don't think it will, but it certainly could. And then it brings in this whole idea. This is the scary part about baseball altogether. The Dodgers are better than the Padres, but the Padres are decent, and the Padres have had a couple of good nights in a row and beaten the Dodgers. And let's fast forward into September, DeMarco, when the playoffs start. All it takes is a bad two or three days. You don't need to have a bad week or a month. You just need to have a bad couple of nights in a short period of time, and you're out. If this was a playoff series, and by the way, these teams may face each other in the playoffs, so we don't know, Dodgers would be in an 0-2 hole and be in big, big trouble. There's nobody on earth that watches baseball that thinks that the Dodgers aren't a better team than the Padres this season. They are, but they have the same record. Padres have beaten them twice in a row. Padres have, they played each other five times. Padres have won three, Dodgers have won two. I mean, and this is what I'm saying. In a playoff series, this is the problem, that being better isn't enough. You need to be better and playing really well, and the Dodgers are only one of those things right now.
I got a question for you, man. I mean, do you know more Charger fans than Padre fans? How many Padre fans do you actually know?
Well, God, Lee, that's a great question. Yeah, I think I know more Padre fans than Charger fans, and I think it's 2-1.
I don't know any Padre fans, so I don't mind, like, you know, talking trash about them, but I don't believe them. I think they're hot for now, but I think they have a pretty good young team that's coming around, and, you know, Machado, $300 million guy, I think I think he's phenomenal, but the way they're hitting right now, do you think that's going to last?
yeah, I do, Marco.
You do? Really?
I do. Fernando Tatis is already on the short list of best player in baseball. He just got here. He's a kid, but he's polished, man. You know, I'm sure you've seen it in football too. There are just some guys that come in that are a little green, and you say, you know what, that dude right there, in 3 seasons, he's going to be a problem for everybody. And then there's some guys that just show up and like, wait, you're 20? What?
But the Padres are leading the majors in home runs. Come on.
That's weird. that part, I'm with. But Tatis is legit. Grisham is legit. Machado's legit. Fam's legit. So those four guys right out of the chute are a real problem. Eric Hosmer is not a great player anymore, but this is a guy that's been on a World Series winning team. He's not going to be scared. Will Myers has been in Major League Baseball, I think, since the 70s. He's been around forever, and he's certainly not going to be scared. And then you got this mix of kind of younger, newer guys. The Padres question is their pitching. The Dodgers are better than them, but if you're waiting for these guys to implode, I think that they're going to back up a little bit, but they're good. The Dodgers need to find a way to get some offense.
This is my thought. I think the Padres caught the Dodgers at the right time. The Dodgers are trying to figure it out, and you're hot. That's what I got. And, you know, they were doing all this without Machado, and now Machado's back, and you see what he can do. So, not totally disrespecting them, but this isn't the best playing Dodger squad we've seen this year. Let's talk in a month, and we'll see what happens then. But right now, I'm just not a big believer in the Padres as of right now.
Are there slumps in football, DeMarco? Are there times where – because in baseball, we know exactly what it means. Where a really good player, Cody Bellinger, for instance, goes through, you know, a month or thereabouts, and you just can't do anything right.
Hell
and
no.
Everybody
There's
knows
no- – No, there's no slumps equivalent. In football. Yeah, the contracts aren't guaranteed. They'll cut you. Yeah, no such thing. Yeah. I mean, if there is a slump, it's due to something. Like if you have an ankle or a shoulder and you're not playing well and there's an excuse for it, okay. But if you just all of a sudden start to stink and suck, you're going to the bottom of the bench. And if you don't improve, you're out of there, period. That's how it goes in football. So slumps don't exist unless you're injured.
Not even for a quarterback? You're just kind of not seeing it real well, and you're making some bad throws.
What do they always say in football? The most popular player on any football team is the backup quarterback.
Right.
So they'll start chanting the other guy's name if you stink. There better be an excuse for why you're not playing well, really. Either you've got nothing but undrafted rookie free agent offensive linemen in front of you that are not protecting you, or you must be injured or something's wrong with you to be playing bad in football. Or you're gone. That's just how that game works.
Dodgers would have a lot of guys that are gone at this point. They're football players because they've got some struggles. It'll turn. I think it turns tonight. Julio Urias goes for the Dodgers tonight. He, along with Ross Stripling and Dustin May, have been their three best pitchers so far this season. So hopefully Julio keeps it rolling tonight, gets them back on the right side of things. And you and I can have a little bit of a deep breath tomorrow, because I'm not worried about it because they're still winning a lot more than they're losing. But the fact that they can't get the ball, get the bats going is a little bit of a deal. All right. Speaking of a little bit of a deal, the Lakers are the number one seed. We're going to find out who their opponent in the first round is going to be by the weekend. And you better cross your fingers, toes, and everything else you got that it's not Damian Lillard, because he is a problem. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Lakers have that number one seed locked down. If Portland, DeMarco, beats their opponent, Brooklyn, on Thursday, they are at least guaranteed a position in that playoff round. Keep in mind, just for people that maybe forgot or never knew, the bubble is going to have a play-in game, basically games potentially, for that eighth seed in the West. That whoever is the eighth seed and whoever is the ninth seed, they're going to play each other on Saturday. If the ninth seed wins that game, there's another game on Sunday. The winner of that game then will become the final team in the Western Conference. If the eighth seeded team wins on Saturday, they're in, they go on, and they'll be the Lakers' opponent. So we'll know who the Lakers are playing maybe by Sunday at the latest. Portland is going to be Go ahead.
Is it looking like Portland?
Well, Portland's getting in a great spot. Yeah. Portland, if they win tomorrow, they at least guarantee themselves the opportunity to play on the weekend. So they will be locked into either 8 or 9. So that's bad news if you're the Lakers, because here's the rub. Michael Thompson has said this a million times. Whenever we do last man standing or any of these games that we have, we're trying to come up with a player who's done X, Y, and Z the most. The answer is always Wilt Chamberlain. Okay, just because Wilt is always, if you're listing the guys that have done this, say Wilt Chamberlain and you're never going to be wrong. Okay,
on the floor or off the floor?
like I said, just say Wilt Chamberlain and you're going to be right. so last night, Damian Lillard joined a list that had only Wilt Chamberlain on it. Damian Lillard's now just the second player in NBA history to have 3 60-plus point games. He had 61 yesterday against Dallas. They needed every last one of them. They win the game 134 to 131. And he's playing at a level right now where, look, LeBron James is better than Damian Lillard. I don't care. I do not want that guy to be a part of my life. I do not want to see zero. I don't want to see Dame up and down the court saying, oh, yeah, I can get 60 tonight. Because if you got a guy that can get 60, he can beat you. I don't care who's on your team. I don't care if Anthony Davis is going. I don't care if LeBron is going. If that guy over there is going to get 60, because the other guys, they're going to get their 50-plus just on accident. If one guy gets 60, we got a problem.
Well, I hope you have some sort of a plan. I'm just looking at what they've done and what he's done. The Nuggets, the Rockets, the Grizz, I mean, they've all lost to Portland, and it's all been because of him. And it seems like he's being fueled by what's being said about him on social media. And he's out to prove that he's better than what you think he is. So just imagine the hype. Imagine what's coming down the pike if Portland wins that 8 seed outright, and it is them that the Lakers have to face. The hype that's going to be around that game, and I agree with you, man. He'll go to a different level, but there's also a guy on this side that will also take it up a notch, and it is LeBron James. So I do fear and respect Mr. Lillard. Dame, I respect you. I will put all due respect to your name, but I do kind of give myself pause because – it's fun saying LeBron James is on your side. I don't care what you say. It is fun saying that guy, the best player on the planet, is on your side. But I agree with you, man. If anybody can, you know, upset the apple cart, it's going to be a guy like Dame Lillard. He's got the game, and he's just got the fire right now to do it.
You know,
and
you mentioned
like the environment sets up for him anyway, being in that bubble.
Oh, it clearly doesn't bother him. He has not had to adjust to playing inside that bubble. I mean, just these numbers really quickly. Took 32 shots, made 17 of them. Took 17 threes, made 9 of them. He went to the foul line 18 times, made all of them. 18 for 18 from the line, added all up at 61 points. I mean, basketball is one type of sport. Your sport, DeMarco, football, is a little different where you can play kind of on the edge all the time with your emotions. That just lends itself to football. You ever have a guy, whether you played with or against, that was like Lillard, that's just not only plays with rage and just this incredible intensity, but also can harness it completely? Because we've seen other guys play with just their minds gone, right? Just this incredible intensity and passion and rage, but it usually gets the better. Like you think of Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook is the most competitive guy in the world, but it sometimes works against Russell Westbrook. I never get that sense with Lillard. Did you have guys like that in the league?
You know, the loudmouths, the guys that played off emotion, that fed off emotion, were the easiest ones to block, beat, or tackle. The ones that were killers, I'm getting ready to play a playoff game versus Minnesota at home. Minnesota is the visitor, and I'm warming up. I'm getting a lather up, and I'm trying to get my blood up. And Chris Carter is walking around still in street clothes, just talking to people. Just, hey, what's going on? How you doing? How's your family? Jerry Rice was the same way. I almost imagine him walking on the field in a 3-piece suit. He was so calm. You know, it's the calm guys that give you problems in football, but in basketball it seems to be a little bit different. But remember that thing I said about Danny Green? Remember those tweets and texts and don't delete? But against a guy like Dame, he will come up big. Now, it's not that he's going to go shot for shot or shut him down, but he's not going to get run over by a guy like Dame Lillard. I think that is going to be more important than anything if the Lakers have to bump heads with the Trailblazers in the playoffs.
Let's take a listen to Lillard, because it's just it's a great insight to him and how he goes about it. He was asked about the quote that he said last night, you know, put some respect on my name. He had a couple of different adjectives thrown in there, but this was his response.
Dame, after the game, the emotion and anger you showed and saying put respect on my name, who was that directed at?
Whoever has something to say.
Was there anybody in the arena that in particular?
It was just a bunch of people on that, on the opposite side, that press row area. And those are the people who usually have something to say or put out whatever they put out. So it was just in that direction.
Right.
Did you ever watch like wrestling in the 90s with Stone Cold Steve Austin when he came out into the arena?
See, you're bigger than me, DeMarco, so I can't answer what I'd like to, but I'll just say no, I don't watch wrestling.
Okay. So Stone Cold would walk out and The Rock would do it too. The Rock would do it. They would both come out and they would look at the crowd and just start talking to people like they're talking trash, but no one really said anything. They're making it up. You know what I mean? They're making it up as they go to the arena. I mean, so it's kind of the same thing. I mean, Michael Jordan did it in The Last Dance. You're hearing what you want to hear. You know, you're going to pull that fuel from anywhere you can that's going to lift you above everyone else. So if it's real, if you get a Skip Bayless or a couple of players that you may play against that are talking trash that's out there and that's what you need to take you to the next level, you're going to feed into that. You're going to lean into that, man. So the best thing you can do to a guy like Dame is just leave him alone.
Yeah.
Don't say a word and play your game. But, you know, if you really want to see the best of him, go ahead and keep talking.
Has he gotten into that category for you, DeMarco? Because, and I don't want to say that just like, oh, okay, there now he's there, but it's just more ethereal. It's you kind of get to where you just expect him to do stuff. And what I'm talking about is he feels to me that he's in that category with guys like Steph Curry now and Klay Thompson, where every shot he takes, I expect it to go in. I don't care if it's a 40-footer. When he pulls up to let it go, I expect to go in. The Klay and Steph are on this level of great shooters. They kind of change the way that the NBA is played. Kevin Durant has certainly got into that level where when Kevin Durant pulls up, it's like, yeah, it's going in. I don't care where he is. I don't care who's guarding him. Lillard has gotten to that point where you have to kind of throw him into the category of, is he one of the greatest shooters you've ever seen? Because the numbers say that he is.
Yeah, they're all no bad shots with him. Wherever he pulls up is always good. I mean, like, even if I think, wow, that's kind of deep, boom, he hits it. Okay, well, there are all no bad shots with that guy. So he's fun to watch. You wish he was on your squad. And, you know, he's a terror when he's on the opposite side, especially in the playoffs, because he can knock you out or he can extend the series at any moment. So, you know, he is he's fun. But what I would try to do if I was on the floor, now this is a novice basketball mentality, but I would try to get him frustrated at his own guys. I'd apply the Jordan rules. He's going to score whatever he's going to score, but I'm going to lock you down. So whatever play they try to run, whatever they try to do, I'm going to try to get him to go off at his own guys. And more often than not, that's what happens with Westbrook. You can make him mad at his own guys, and he can shut his own team down for you. So that would be the approach I would try to use with a guy like Lillard.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at it last night. Carmelo had a big night. He had 26 points, looked pretty good. But the rest of the guys really didn't do a bunch. You know, Zach Collins had 11. C.J. McCollum had 8. And look, I can't imagine the pressure that Frank Vogel and his guys are under, knowing that the second the ball is in Lillard's hands, I don't care if he's at the half-court line, you better pick his ass up because he's going to let it go. That just puts an incredible amount of pressure on your defense. And that's one of the things the Lakers have really struggled with in the reboot, is dealing with backcourt players that are really, really explosive offensively. And there's nobody that fits that better than Lillard. So, buckle up.
John Sally, told me once about basketball and basketball strategy. When it comes to defense, just make them take tough shots. If you're in good position defensively, you keep a hand up, make them shoot over you. If they make it, so be it. They get paid to do it. Expect it. But don't give him or them anything easy. Make them work for it, and then let's see what happens with the ball when it hits the rim, if it goes in or not.
All right. No college football on the West Coast. No college football in the Midwest. Both the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have said we're not going to play in the fall. What might spring football look like? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.